wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time for Gordon Goldsborough to tell us exactly what he meant by last week's clue. You might have been scratching your heads all week. You might have guessed it straight away. Or maybe we just don't even bother because we know Gordon is going to fill us in. He joins us in the studio. Good morning, Gordon Goldsborough.
Good morning, Nadja Kidwai.
So who or what, rather, are we talking about on today's episode of Abandoned Manitoba?
Well, last week I hinted that in the early 1880s, a genteel English manor was established in the wilds of western Manitoba. It featured a tennis court, a golf course, and in fact, what is the most pertinent part, the first insect laboratory in western Canada. And what I was referring to is something called the Criddle Vane Homestead that is located south of Canadian Forces Base Shiloh, north of Wauwinisa.
Okay, so Criddle Vane sounds like the name of someone out of Harry Potter. Who exactly was Criddle Vane?
Well, those are the surnames of the two founding families of the homestead, the Criddles and the Vanes. In 1882, 38-year-old Englishman Percy Criddle arrived in Manitoba. He brought with him his wife Alice and her four children, along with Mrs. Elise Vane and her five children. And together, they settled in this area and they built buildings with which to establish a farm. Now, one of the interesting things about Percy is that he was a dedicated diarist, and his diaries have been described by a prominent Manitoba historian as one of the most detailed accounts of the pioneer experience that exists anywhere. Well, in fact, the Criddle Vane experience was in some ways typical of that of many of the other settlers who arrived in Manitoba, but in some ways it was quite unusual, too.
How so?
Well, Percy Criddle was definitely not the sort of fellow one would expect to become a pioneer farmer. He was a gentleman, and I use that word in quotes. You know, I first encountered this word gentleman in old census records, and it said that if anyone's occupation was a gentleman, you know, it meant that basically he didn't work. He was independently wealthy, and he would engage in various gentlemanly pursuits that didn't involve manual labor. In the case of Percy Criddle, it was mainly the children on the Criddle Vane farm who did most of the actual manual labor. Percy was simply too busy doing gentlemanly pursuits. You know, he followed the habits of a cultured gentleman. He spent his time playing the organ, composing music, and maybe most importantly for our story today, he observed the animals and the plants in the world around him. In effect, he continued a long tradition that went back to the days of the fur trade.
And what was that tradition?
Well, you think about the men who engaged in the fur trade here in Canada. You know, many of them came from England and Scotland, where they had had a very good education. They came here, and at times, you know, in the evenings or in winter, they didn't have much to do, and they got kind of bored, so they engaged in some of these gentlemanly pursuits. You know, for example, they would make astronomical observations. They would look at the weather, and they kept detailed records of some of the best records we have, in fact, of early weather phenomena or eclipses and what dates when the ice would break up on rivers and things like that, you know, because they were interested in the world around them. They also were interested in the biology, you know, the plants and the animals, because, of course, this was a wild area that none of them have ever seen before. They were species they had never encountered before. And in fact, a lot of them began to correspond with museums around the world saying, hey, yeah, I've got some interesting plants and animals around me. Would you like me to collect you some specimens so that you'll have, you know, some of these unusual things? And so birds and eggs and plants and seeds, you know, they would send them all over the world. And, you know, in fact, many of them corresponded with the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C. And so even today, some of the best, earliest collections of the wild plants and animals of northern Canada are in these museums, thanks to these early fur traders.
And did any of these fur trade naturalists work here in Manitoba?
Absolutely, because of course they were moved around. They would go from post to post. So any of the ones that were moved into posts in Manitoba or the area that would become Manitoba, of course, would carry on this tradition. Well, then gradually, as the fur trade era gave way to the settlement period in the 1870s, 1880s, you know, this passion for natural history continued. So some of the early settlers were keen naturalists, too. You know, so for example, a fellow named George Atkinson came here to Manitoba from his birthplace in Ontario in 1883. He opened a taxidermy shop at Portage la Prairie, and every summer he would boat along the Assiniboine River from Brandon to Portage. And the idea was that he would observe birds along the route as he went. Now, Mr. Atkinson came to a tragic end, you know, in 1913. Apparently, the thinking is that he suffered an epileptic seizure in his boat. He fell overboard and he drowned. But he did leave an important legacy of taxidermic birds. In fact, the Royal Ontario Museum today has over 100 of his specimens that were collected here, you know, back in the 1880s. You know, so a wonderful record of what was here then.
Did all of these early naturalists specialize on birds?
Oh, no. There was actually an Englishman with the rather grandiose name of Edwin Firmstone Heath. Mr. Heath arrived here in Manitoba in 1878. He settled in the vicinity of present-day Cartwright, Manitoba, and he was keenly interested in the local moths and butterflies. You know, he amassed a huge collection of them. So after he died in 1914, most of his collection was purchased by the provincial government and eventually found their way to the entomology department at the University of Manitoba. And his collection of moths and butterflies is still there today, you know, over 100 years later.
So it sounds like all these early naturalists were focused on animals.
Well, a lot of them did, of course, but actually one of the earliest professional botanists who came to Manitoba was a guy named Reginald Buller. We've actually talked about Professor Buller in this series before. You know, he joined the staff of the University of Manitoba in 1904, and in addition to his formal duties teaching and doing research at the university, he also led nature forays all over Manitoba. And in the process, he collected specimens of plants that he would bring back to Winnipeg. He would dry them out, glue them to a large sheet of paper. And in fact, many of Buller's preserved specimens are still kept in the biology department at the University of Manitoba, where I work. And in fact, in the classes that I teach, I still use some of Buller's original specimens, and I can show the students saying, hey, look at these. They were collected over 100 years ago by Professor Buller himself, and we're still using them for teaching purposes today.
Are there any other collections of either animals or all plants from the early years of Manitoba?
Oh, yeah. You know, we just don't have time to list them all, you know. But I would say that if any listeners are interested in this topic, you should watch for a book that's going to be published later this spring by retired paleontologist Dr. Jim Burns. He's writing about the origins of the Manitoba Museum, but he talks about many of the pioneering naturalists of Manitoba. A fascinating story.
All right, back to Harry Potter, because where do the Criddles and Vanes figure into this story?
Well, several of them, in addition to Percy Criddle, were keen amateur naturalists. So Norman Criddle, he arrived in Manitoba with his family at the age of 7. He had a particular aptitude in insects and plants, but he was also a gifted artist. And in fact, he painted some exceptional watercolor paintings of wild plants that were included in a book on farm weeds. In fact, many years ago, my wife and I bought what we thought was a beautiful print of a plant. And it turns out it had been taken out of a book that had been written on, say, the weed plants of Canada that Norman Criddle had painted. It was just absolutely beautiful. Norman Criddle also developed an early insecticide called Criddle Mixture, and it was intended to counteract a grasshopper infestation that occurred in Manitoba in 1902. He studied the ability of insect-eating crows to eat cutworms. You know, and in fact, he did some really neat experiments with a group of 4 young crows that he found. He fed them cutworms, trying to figure out how many cutworms a crow could eat. And it turned out he couldn't feed them enough cutworms. They ate everything he could give them and then some. And he was amazed at just how much these crows could eat. You know, in 1913, he began working as an insect biologist for the federal government. And he served in this position until 1933. So he made a major contribution to the natural history of Manitoba.
So what's the status of the Criddle Vane homestead now?
Right. So there's our theme of abandonment this week. You know, the last members of the Criddles and Vanes left the site in 1960. You know, the entire place, including the buildings and a family cemetery, basically they were all designated as a provincial historic site in 2004. The second home that had been constructed by the Criddles and Vanes, a 2-story wood frame building that dated from 1905, unfortunately, it was destroyed in what we think was an arson fire in 2014. But the insect laboratory, the key to this story is the naturalist work that was done there. The insect laboratory that had been built for Norman Criddle in 1915, the first one in Western Canada, you know, where he amassed an extensive collection of butterflies and beetles and other insects. It was restored around 2006, and it's still standing there, so the site is definitely worth a visit today.
And what does it look like?
Well, rolling hills. It's in a sandy area, so it's kind of a beautiful area. Lots of the native vegetation is still there. You can't see much of the golf course. It's pretty much overgrown. The family cemetery is still there. There are still interpretive signs there at the site. It's just a beautiful area, particularly if you appreciate the natural beauty of Manitoba. It's a wonderful place to stop and look.
Are those old collections of the plants and birds and insects that were made by these early naturalists of any value today?
Well, you know, not really in monetary terms. You know, they're not worth a lot of money, but to biologists, they are incredibly valuable. You know, because one of our concerns about the impacts of humans on the environment is the potential loss of biodiversity. You know, we lose plants and animals when they lose their habitat. You know, when we have invasive foreign species that come in, when we have climate change or the exposure to pollution. You know, and so we can't really say if we've lost biodiversity unless we have a point of reference. We say we used to have this many and now we have this many, or we used to have these species and now we don't. You know, these are the sorts of questions you can answer when you have these early collections. And so these old collections, that many of them going back over 100 years, are absolutely invaluable as a way of assessing the extent of environmental change in Manitoba.
All thanks to the foresight, I guess, of those early fur trade naturalists.
Foresight or just their enthusiasm for wanting to know about the world around them.
Your two worlds coming together, biology and abandonment. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadia.
And Gordon, the clue for next week.
Well, next week we're going to launch a sort of an occasional series that will sprinkle through the year. Of course, this year is Manitoba's 150th anniversary. And I thought to myself recently, what would I see around me that the people from 1870 would have recognized? In other words, are there any remnants of this early Manitoba? So the series is going to be called literally that, Remnants of Early Manitoba, things that have been with us for at least 150 years. And, you know, I'm willing to bet there are listeners who know of some of these things. So if you have any ideas on these early remnants, please let us know and we'll feature some of them in the course of the next several months.
Bringing history to life. Sounds great, Gordon. Thank you so much.
See you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.